Audio Podcast Network.
Hey guys, we know times have been tough lately for all of us.
And during hard times, it can be difficult if you don't have anyone to talk to, or it can be hard to talk about certain topics.
Being alone with your thoughts can be isolating. This is why we are sponsored by BetterHelp.
BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen to and help you.
Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience.
BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. Thank goodness.
There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to the help that may not be available in your area.
You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. That is Amazon fast. Then you schedule secure video and phone sessions. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages, and everything you share is completely confidential, just like with an in-person therapist.
You can request a new therapist at any time at no additional charges. If you want to talk to someone about your mental health, you can get a 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/herstory. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/herstory. Hello and welcome back to Whining About Herstory, the Women's History Podcast, where two longtime best friends, or as Emily likes to say, besties with breasties, chat about women from history that usually have very depressing stories and, you know, people don't remember because our history classes are bullshit, but we're here to tell you about them. That's what this podcast is about. We're going to whine about them, whine about what happened, talk about how badass they were, and have a lot of fun doing it. I'm Kelly.
I'm Emily, and fewer people die in my story this week.
Yeah, I think fewer people die in my story too. I'm like, I mean, when you start off with the Battle of Gettysburg, you're setting the bar pretty low.
I mean, to be fair, it would be pretty wretched to get above 50,000 after last week.
Yeah.
So fewer people die. I'm not saying everyone lives. But fewer people die. 10 deaths or less. Get in line.
Yeah, I can get in line for that. I think mine is on the same level.
Kelly, my darling, what are you drinking today?
Nothing, because I had dinner right before this. And then I forgot to get myself another drink. So, nothing.
That's okay. Just make sure you stay hydrated.
I mean, I can't. I don't have anything to drink.
Well,
like, period. I have
in
nothing.
General, in a general Fine. Sense, stay hydrated. Pee clear, give a cheer.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a truly passion fruit.
Oh, so passionate.
Because I'm still right in my lady boner from talking about Brendan Fraser and the entire cast of 1999's The Mummy. God damn.
That like,
oh my God.
The Magi guy.
Oh my
yeah.
God.
Okay. Like, that's when I like realized my like thing for like men with long hair.
Well, his hair is like, he takes care of his hair.
Oh, it's nice.
I'm just going to say
he has nice
it's
hair.
Not the long hair. It's nice long hair.
Yeah.
Like, take care of your fucking hair.
I mean, just take care of yourself. You will always look better if you take care of yourself.
Invest in yourself. And shampoo that doesn't double as butt wash.
Butt wash.
Yeah.
What if I like my butt wash shampoo, Emily? God.
But your butt hairs are so silky. But no, have you ever seen like men's bath products?
Oh, it's like all in one.
It's shampoo, conditioner, body wash, toothpaste, deodorant,
oh,
lube,
God,
moisturizer, oil for your car.
Yeah, it's like everything in one. I'm like, you know, no.
You need one liquid to live, and it's in this bottle, and it smells like Irish Spring.
I mean, at least I got the scent right.
Old Spice is new, one bottle, one lifetime.
You only ever need to buy one.
You only ever need to buy one. It will do everything for you. And this is it. That, like, you can use it for your entire life.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a burn? Old Spice. Oh, you have a bug bite? Irish Spring.
Yeah, exactly. They're all interchangeable. Man, we got
off
topic.
Dying in the desert from thirst? Irish Spring, bitch.
We didn't even get to a story to get off topic today.
So even before we get to a story, I actually have a say their name for us.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
So I was going to say it last week, but your story was already really long and it was totally worth it though. Like, I loved your story. I loved every second of it, except all the parts where people died.
I mean, it was less tragically than yours.
Well, okay. But I didn't name the 50,000 people. Like, you got into the your deaths were more intimate.
Yeah, they were. She got right up in okay. there. All up in the feels.
So I just wanted to give a shout out. Full disclosure, I have not been here yet, but we definitely need to go to a bar of her own.
Oh, yeah.
So this is Minnesota's first bar dedicated to women's sports. It just opened just in time for March Madness, and Caitlin Clark just like slaying everyone. And so it's located in Minneapolis. And I just want to read a little bit from their about section. So in the spring of 2023, we went with a group of our friends to a nearby sports bar to watch the University of Minnesota Gophers softball team. Go Gophers.
Go Gophers.
Goldie the Gopher. Play in the national tournament. After not seeing the game on any of the 20 plus televisions, we asked the bartender if they could get it on one of the many screens which were currently playing everything from football game reruns to a cornhole tournament. No women's sports. Reruns of games that have already happened.
Including cornhole.
Cornhole.
Yeah.
That being said, I stand for cornhole. I watched like the really intense finals of this like local brewery's cornhole league.
Dude, it gets intense.
It was so crazy. I felt like I was at an actual sporting event because we were all like, oh, like we were so into it. So like, honestly, the football reruns are more egregious to me than the cornhole.
I figured.
So we stopped to ask ourselves, what if it was different? What if fans of women's sports had a place to come together and cheer loudly for their favorite team on the biggest screen in the bar with the sound on? Dun, dun, dun. Excited Gopher. What if those same fans had a wide variety of food and beverage options, including a robust menu, accommodating different dietary needs with a killer craft beer selection and tasty mocktails? Ooh. And what if they had a bar of their own? We are thrilled to bring you Minnesota's first sports bar dedicated exclusively to women's sports. We invite you to join us in building an inclusive, family-friendly space for women's sports fans of all ages to join in the excitement. Signed, Jillian Hiscock, the owner. So it's just opened up. It's already got like 4.7 star on Google with 99 reviews. If you want to go visit it, it's at 2207 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And because I am a glutton for punishment and I have like a sick, twisted pleasure in reading bad reviews, especially ours. Like one of my favorite reviews is our 1-star review, to the point where we made it into merch. So naturally I had to look up and see what the bad reviews were for this place, because there are so few. And there were a few of them. They weren't like 1-star reviews, but there were three where they were just like, it was really busy. And I'm like, that's a good thing though. Like, I get it, but that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So basically the legitimate complaints have just been, it's really popular. And I'm like, yes.
I like hearing that. But
It's awesome. I definitely want to go. And I
believe friend of the podcast / sister-in-law Caitlin, I think she went and I think she said it was pretty cool.
Oh, yes. But I did find one-star review in particular that I wanted to share because it's the perfect illustration of why a bar of their own needs to exist. So this is from Derek Baker, whose name is public on Google. Like, I can say this. He posted, "This has to be the most ridiculous idea for a bar."
So wait, did he not even go to the bar?
He posted it 4 weeks ago, like when it opened. This whole review screams he has never actually been there.
Okay.
Because really, he just has an issue with the concept. He doesn't say anything about the service. He doesn't say anything about the food or drinks.
Yeah, he like started reading and I'm like, you haven't been there, have you?
And he's left like 36 other reviews of like, and most of them are negative because apparently Mr. Baker has all the time in the world on his hands. Also, I want to point out here, there are no apostrophes or like commas or punctuation throughout this, except for the period at the first sentence and the period at the end.
Okay.
They say they don't, no apostrophe, want discrimination, but discriminate against male sports by only showing women's sports.
Women's sports.
What a joke. This is what all caps woke looks like, people. Don't fall for it.
Oh my God.
I'm like, okay. They're catering to fans of women's sports exclusively. Like a sports bar might cater exclusively to fans of sports. And no, inadvertently,
too much
men's
for him.
Sports, because that's all they're playing.
It's too much for him.
I'm never gonna, like, every time I talk about, like, women's sports, I'm gonna say women's sports.
Women's sports.
A good game of women's sport ball. Yeah. So
yeah, because it is. It's not like being like, here is a constructive criticism. I did like that. This is what woke looks like. Yeah. Cool. You're the only person that has a problem with this because you probably literally never leave your house.
The first and only bar dedicated to playing only women's sports. And he cries discrimination.
Sounds about right.
Oh my God. This doesn't cater directly to me. I feel left out.
I'm going to feel uncomfortable going here because I don't like women's sports.
No one is making you go.
Exactly.
And you obviously haven't been. So if that review is not enough for you to go and check out a bar of her own, I don't know what is. You might be broken
they
inside.
They really need a shirt that says a bar of their own, a place for women's sports.
A place for women's sports. It's not even woman's. It's woman singular sports.
Plural.
There's one woman playing multiple sports.
Well, if it's woman, it's still multiples. But yeah.
Where you like woman sports? Name a woman.
I bet you can't.
But that is my say their name, a bar of their own, and Jillian Hiscock.
Also, I do.
They have an online store.
I do love the name. Oh, I know. I'm like, okay, hold on. Let's look at this.
Kelly, this is all I want for Christmas. This is all I want. A crew neck sweatshirt with their logo.
I mean, you know how I feel. Like, I love the movie, A League of Their Own. So
we love the tour company, A Tour of Their Own.
Yeah, exactly.
Or A Tour of Her Own, excuse me.
Oh, I like the softball tee.
I saw that and immediately thought of you because I know you love a good softball tee.
I love a good softball tee. But yeah, the crew neck sweatshirt looks nice too.
I love that. Okay, anyway. that's my say their name. So keep tuned in for our 5-star review.
Heck yeah.
our review that we're going to leave after we have actually gone there. We're not just bitching about women creating spaces that celebrate women.
I mean, yeah, because we would totally bitch about something like that. We'd have to bitch about ourselves at that point.
Again, it's not exclusively for women. It's just like,
it's,
hey,
fans of women's
normal bar
sports. Yeah.
And find women's sports. So why don't we play that? That's also capitalism.
Yeah.
You fill the niche. There's a demand. You meet that demand. Welcome to capitalism.
You make money.
My
congratulations.
Friend. You're leaving Google reviews all over the place. That's also part of capitalism. The whole thing. You don't get to pick and choose.
I mean, he thinks he does.
Well, he has made his opinion very clear. And I think I have made mine also very clear.
He's made his very clear and unapostrophied.
Unapostrophe. Maybe don't use contractions if you don't know how to use them.
Yeah, right.
Just saying.
Just
sign
saying.
The English major.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, my
okay.
God. I had to do some math at work today and I fucked up. And the accounting manager let me know I fucked up. Like he was very nice.
He yeah.
Like, Emily,
he nicely was like, hey,
but
by
he's
the
like,
way.
I don't think those numbers are right. And I'm like, they're probably not. And I looked at him. I was like, this is what happens when they make the English major do math. Okay. There's a reason I majored in English. I want to get as far away from numbers as humanly possible. But don't you come for my Oxford comma.
Right. Exactly. That's super funny. These numbers don't look right. Yeah, probably not.
Oh, I'm sure you're correct, but could you show me where I went wrong? And actually, it wasn't even the math was wrong. I was just reading the thing I was getting the information from incorrectly because it was poorly designed.
Oh, okay.
Because it was designed by fucking accountants.
I don't blame you then. I blame the
yes,
accountants.
It was truly not my fault.
All right, Emily. Are you whining about?
Oh, fuck. Well, I am actually very, very excited about my story. So a little pretense. I have been kind of planning my next tattoo and like what I would like to do.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I've decided I want to get a cat in kind of like one of those saintly portraits where they got like the hand up and the halo and they've got the robes, but like it's a cat. Because I think that's okay. Like a great way to explain my love of cats and show that off, but also like kind of poke fun at my Catholic upbringing
yep.
that I love to simultaneously claim ownership of
and
then throw away
yep.
and then claim it back.
Sounds about accurate for most of us that like went through Catholic school.
Yeah, I can just go to confession and it's sane.
Fine.
I'm confirmed. I've
Jesus.
Earned it. But I'm also realizing I may have picked the wrong saint for my confirmation because as I was looking up potential reference photos, Googling cat saint.
Oh, God.
I found Saint Gertrude of Nivelle.
You're fucking kidding.
I am not fucking kidding. Which is suspiciously similar to my last name.
I know. That's why I was saying you're fucking kidding. Like, that's wow.
I was like, oh my God.
You did. You
I
picked
so
the wrong
mistakes.
Saint.
This woman is my fucking God now. Okay. So today I am whining about Saint Gertrude of Nivelle, the Catholic cat lady. And this actually, the story turned out to be a little it was more interesting than I thought it was just gonna be like she was a cat lady
and a saint,
the end.
Yeah,
Catholic cats done. But I actually learned some interesting things that pertain to women's history in general.
Oh, wow.
And she was a real person. There are a lot of differing like dates and numbers and like places.
Yeah,
so
that
I
sounds
just
accurate
kind of, yeah, so I just kind of did my best. So
sounds
if
good.
You've read it different somewhere, who's to say?
None of us were there. So,
None of us were there. Show pics or it didn't happen. Okay.
Oh my God.
Don't come at me.
Do not
this
get in the
This is
my
comments. Lady. So every March 17th, us Bonnie Catholics love to celebrate a saint who is probably best known for driving away unwanted pests. That's right.
Me?
It's the... What?
Because my birthday is in March. So it's like, me?
I said March 17th.
Oh, I'm
specifically,
sorry.
Specifically, you're
the
day
birthday.
Before.
I thought you said in March. Were...
No, every March 17th.
Okay, fine.
Us Bonnie Catholics love to celebrate a saint who's probably best known for driving away unwanted pests.
I know who you're getting at. St. Patrick.
That's right. It's the feast of St. Gertrude of Nivelles. Did you think I was going to say St. Patrick?
I mean, if you did, I would have been like, drop the Irish accent because he wasn't actually Irish.
Well, she actually had to do with a lot of Irish people.
No, I know, but I'm saying if you were, yeah. If you were trying to get St. Patrick, I would have told you to drop the Irish accent because he wasn't actually Irish.
This is true, but also check your lease. This is a Herstory podcast and you're living in Herstory City, bitches.
I like that.
So Catholic cat folks all over the world celebrate St. Gertrude of Nivelles, the patron saint of cats, and arguably the OG cat lady of the Catholic canon. But who was this pure of heart lady?
Oh, God.
And now did she become the patron saint of the most perfect creature on the planet?
I'm gonna go now.
Kelly, did
Done.
You mute me?
Thought about it. Click.
I actually didn't include that many cat puns because I got really into like
the story,
trying to piece together her life, yeah. And like all the moving parts of it. So that was my
got all the cat,
that was my
the
dump
cat
in
puns
the litter
out
box
at the
for
beginning,
you.
Yeah.
So let's travel way back to the 1600s because we're going to get medieval up in here.
Ooh, we haven't done that in a long time.
So Gertrude was reportedly born sometime around the 620s, 626, 628, who knows, in Landen, Kingdom of Austrasia.
The fuck is Austrasia?
Or modern day Belgium.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Austrasia.
All right.
Austrasia. She also might have been born in Nivelles, which is a town. A lot of people say a lot of different things. Who the fuck knows? Show me pictures. I wish we had more information, but according to her anonymous biographer, who I will reference a lot throughout this, Mr. Annie Anonymous, quote, "It would be tedious to insert in this account in what line of earthly origin she was descended. For who living in Europe does not know the loftiness, the names, and the localities of her lineage?"
Oh my God.
Literally no one, you asshole, because we don't fucking know. He's like, it's
he's
not
like,
worth
I don't
saying.
Want to.
Yeah, he's literally like, it's not worth saying. Like, if you know, you know. And it's like, bitch, no one knows. No one even knows who the fuck you are.
Right.
Anyway.
If you know, you know. No one knows. You don't know.
I want to.
That's the
I
thing I get out of this is like,
way.
You don't know. Clearly, that's what you're saying is you also don't know.
That is actually kind of how I wrote a lot of English papers, where it's like, well, it goes without saying how impactful this book has been on English literature, so I'm not gonna say it. So born as one of at least three children, maybe four, who the fuck knows, to parents Pippin of Landen, a nobleman from Franzia the boxed wine,
clearly,
and Ida of Metz. Gertrude, oh God, my cat knocked something over. He knows the story's all about him. Gertrude grew up in an aristocratic household, so she was afforded the luxuries that all that afforded, like learning to read. Her
all
father,
right.
Pippin, had played a part in the current king of Austrasia, Dagobert the First, because that was a name that they just needed to keep using.
I mean, he was the first. So if there's no one after him, they didn't keep using it.
Well, the first implies there was at least a second. And I believe there was. But yeah, Dagobert, like, let's bring it back.
Four, I want to say.
So Pippin helped the current king of Austrasia get to the throne.
Okay.
And this afforded the family power and luxury in the king's court.
That makes sense.
So they're sitting pretty. They're living it up. They're like, the aristocracy don't start till I walk in. So this exposed Gertrude to royal politics, and she was expected to fulfill her duty as a good daughter and marry for power and status.
Okay, yeah, after that sounds all, about her, right.
As one does.
As a woman does.
As a woman does. As a woman sports does. After all, her brother, Grimold, let's bring
that's another
name back.
We need to bring back, yep.
I will say this story is full of great cat names. Pippin, Grimold.
Yeah.
Even Gertrude is a great cat name.
Dagobert.
So her Dagobert. So many nicknames. So Grimold would find political power as mayor of the Palace of Austrasia, and her sister Bega would marry, who had to Bega for nothing.
Oh!
Oh! I fucking said that, and no one was surprised.
Right?
So she would go on to marry a bishop's son and produce a line of children that would eventually lead to King Charlemagne.
Oh, shit.
No relation to Emily Roebling's bridge crossing rooster, who, friend of the podcast, Caitlin, agrees Charlemagne is a great name. But there's like that old saying that it's like everyone or the majority of people of European descent are related to Charlemagne. Therefore, we are related to Bega, and therefore we are related to Gertrude of Nivelles, which am I a reincarnation? I know the Catholics aren't into that, but who the fuck knows?
Also, most people are also related to Genghis Khan because he, like, literally fucked around Europe.
He irrevocably changed the gene pool of the planet. Well, and
Charlemagne for a very similar reason, actually.
Yes. Well, and I was reading the Scientific America article because I was going to get more into it, and I just decided, like, this wasn't about that. But basically, the Scientific America article is like, we're all fucking related. We're all a bunch of little inbred boomers.
I mean,
dancing around the plains of Wisconsin.
I mean, even if you, like, it's one of those things. If you go back far enough, yeah, of course we're going to be.
Well, and you look at how many entire family lines have ended, and like the surviving family lines, like the gene pool, arguably is pretty shallow.
Yeah.
So, Gertrude, on the other hand, had different plans for her future. When she was but 10 years old, her father Pippin hosted a banquet at which the king was in attendance. Good old King Dagobert I asked 10-year-old Gertrude if she would like to marry, quote, the son of a duke of the Austrasians for the sake of his worldly ambition and mutual alliance. As one asks a 10-year-old girl.
Right. I mean, I got asked that like every other weekend. I don't know what you're talking about.
It was like kids say the darndest things was really weird in the 600s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's more like adults Gertrude say the darndest things.
Adults ask kids really weird questions about their futures and if they're going to marry for power. Yeah. I actually kind of want to ask Q that now. Like, Q, would you marry for power and allegiance? Just see what she would say. So Gertrude reportedly, quote, lost her temper and flatly rejected him with an oath, saying she would have neither him nor any earthly spouse but Christ the Lord.
Jesus.
Or as catgenie.com wrote, she wasn't going to marry no man at all, so jot that down, thank you very much. The resources I found on Gertrude were amazing.
Great.
So Cat Genie, if you don't know, is that like automatic scooping litter box.
okay. I did.
And they
I
had mean, an like, entire I, article.
On did her. They really? Jesus.
Seriously, all the resources other than Wikipedia were either like Catholic websites or cat people websites.
I mean,
there was no in between.
That makes sense.
It was so much. It was amazing. But yeah, I was like, I never thought I'd cite Cat Genie on this podcast. Dreams do come true.
Oh, God. Feel free to sponsor Cat Genie. At least half of the podcast, because I have no use for you.
Cat Genie, I have a cat and he shits like crazy. And it's hard. I have one cat with two boxes and it's a lot to keep up with. I would love to have the personal experience of your product, and then I will never stop talking about it. Okay. So this wasn't just like an ew, boys have cooties kind of statement. Women and girls in the Middle Ages were important tools in establishing, maintaining, and growing political and social power. A woman's feelings did not factor into the strategy,
no.
And women had, and they had little to no say in who they married. But again, like, they weren't just like, oh, you're a woman, you're worthless. Like, aristocratic women were very important.
They were
seen as tools.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Like, they are literally the pawns on a chessboard. Like, we move you into place and you do what we tell you.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, I'm surprised the king even asked her, like, oh, do you want to marry this person? It wasn't just like, oh, by the way, you're getting married to this person.
So I don't think it was so much I think it was kind of like
joking question.
Like, I think it was like a voluntold thing where it's like, hey, can you work this weekend? Because we're really short-staffed and we super need you. And if you say no, it's going to have negative consequences for the rest of your life. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't waste that tool.
No.
So in addition, Christianity and Catholicism was not the it religion of Gertrude's time, making her proclamation that she would marry Christ even more anti-establishment. So she was like, she was like a super rebel. Like, she's going through her goth phase. She's wearing like the spike necklace and the bracelets and the wrist warmers.
You know?
Yep. She's got like striped knee high socks. She's got her combat boots. And she's like, bitch, I'm going to marry Christ and there's nothing you can do about it.
It just seems so very not goth.
It was the
Victorian
Middle Ages.
Era or Middle Ages goth.
It was very goth and anti-establishment to say I'm going to marry Christ, but Daddy, I love him. Oh, you're 10.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, you don't know what love is.
So the notion that
she's the Little Mermaid of her time.
She is, and Prince Eric is God.
Yep.
So the notion that Gertrude could just not get married or be married to the Christian God was a total non-starter, and throngs of suitors were vying for her hand in marriage as to align with her powerful family. And do you see how my cat has just manifested?
Oh yeah, he knows you're talking about the cat god.
He does. He's blocking my nose. Arthur.
Just put him on his chair.
I worship you. I'm going to put him on my lap and see if he likes that. Oh my God, look how cute he is. He is my king. So it's likely that her father had plans to marry Gertrude off regardless of her protest, because that was his right as her father, and she doesn't have rights and she is a tool. But then he died.
That's convenient for her.
Pippin died.
Although, I mean, maybe not. It kind of just depends, because, like, sometimes, especially in courts like that, either that means if you're an unwedded person, your fate is either then with the king and he chooses who you marry, or with a sibling's husband.
We will get into it, actually. It's really interesting. So while Gertrude no longer had to worry about her father marrying her off to someone, this presented a serious problem for her mother, Ita. So marriages of women to men were not just about securing political power and land. Because of the fucking patriarchy, unmarried girls were seen as unclaimed property and may become victims of kidnapping and forced marriages that weren't politically advantageous. So to protect against forced marriages, yeah, we must commit forced marriages,
yep,
that benefit other people too.
Right. Like at least this benefits someone versus that other one might not benefit anyone.
Yeah. But again, like, and we still see this today. Your association with a man is your safety. It's your protection. And like, I know when I'm out and there's like a guy in the group, I feel a bit safer.
Yeah.
You know,
mainly because you're like, other guys probably aren't going to try anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because you are claimed. You are under the ownership and protection of that guy. Now, if you as a woman say, I have a boyfriend, or I'm not interested, or I'm a lesbian, or I have a partner or something, that means nothing. You have to have a man physically present. Yep. And it is so fucked.
Yep.
And this is where that shit comes from.
Yep. Yay. Systemic patriarchy. Beep, I hope everyone heard the absolute joy in my voice at that.
I think some milk in my fridge actually curdled from your overwhelming joy.
Good.
So Ida's a pretty cool mom. She's a savvy bitch.
Okay.
She killed two birds with one swipe of her paw, and then she left them on the back step for you.
Of course.
Because she wants you to eat and she's taking care of you.
Yeah,
she's
a
good mama
cat. She thinks you're starving.
She shaved Gertrude's head in tonsure, which is like a friar haircut, where it's just like the ring of hair around
God.
The head.
It's my dad's family hair. Not intentionally. Like, that's how my dad's family is. Like, all the men, when they go bald, they still have like the ring. Yeah. It's a thing.
Little friar father cut.
Yeah.
Well, this was on purpose. So so Ida shaved her daughter's head, signifying that she was promised to God. So shaving your head in tonsure was like a sign of your devotion,
yeah,
to God and religion and all that good stuff. Then she took her daughter to Nivelles and built the Abbey of Nivelles, where she and Gertrude served as nuns. This way,
she just fucking doubled down.
Yeah, no, she went hard. And this was actually, I'll get into it, but this was so fucking smart and really like, the strategy behind this is really interesting. So this way her daughter was not only protected, but could fulfill her life's ambition of being in service to God.
Aww.
Also, this feels like rich kid problems,
yep,
where it's like, mommy, I want to be an equestrian. Okay, I will buy you a horse. Mommy, I want to serve God. Okay, mommy will build you an abbey.
Right? Like, Jesus, like, what if you were poor?
Like, Gertrude, check your fucking privilege, okay?
Yeah.
So if this sounds like an extreme reaction to everything that's going on, Eden and Gertrude were not the first women.
Times.
Yes. No, I mean, not all of us had mummies to build us abbeys when we were young, but whatever. I turned it out fine.
I don't think you would have wanted to live in service to God anyways.
Oh God, no. 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 I would have been really bad at it.
Yeah, me too.
Or I would have been the patron saint of
rebellion
curses.
Yeah.
Of sailor language.
There you go.
Praise be to the fucking Lord. Hell yeah. God's the fucking best. Have you heard this shit?
Get on this shit, man.
Honestly, I might still be a practicing Catholic if I had a priest talk to me in
right?
a cool way like that. Anyway, so Ida and Gertrude were not the first women to engage in establishing monasteries. It was actually becoming a more common practice for widowed noble women in the region to focus on creating networks of monasteries rather than putting all of their eggs in the political marriage basket. So this had the added advantage of allowing women to be independent of a husband, because Ida could have gotten remarried, but then she's subject to her new husband and his whims, and she loses any of her rights or any of her land claims. Like, they become his.
That's interesting.
And if Gertrude gets married, she loses any claims to property or money or land that she has. But if they put all of that towards this abbey or a monastery, it's protected and no one's going to make them marry a man.
Right.
So they're able to maintain control and independence.
That's so cool.
How fucked is it, though, that becoming a nun offered you more independence and control than just, like,
I mean, being married? When you run the abbey, you can kind of choose what the rules are, you know?
Yeah. So, in addition, becoming nuns protected Gertrude, her mother, and their lands from retaliation or seizure should her family, namely her male relatives, looking at you, Grimold, fell out
Which
of favor
one?
With the ruling class. So, like, whatever family drama would go on.
I didn't think she was related to Grimold. I thought he was just, like, a friend of the family.
No, that's her brother.
Oh, I thought that was the king. No, that was Dagobert. It was the king.
Okay. Yeah. Dagobert's the king. Grimold is her brother.
Yeah,
so
okay.
He was making political moves in the monarchy. Her sister married someone powerful and started pumping out kids. Like, they both kind of fulfilled their roles. And Gertrude was like, I'm a pass.
God.
I'm a puff puff pass. But also this way, like, say Grimold pissed someone off.
Yeah, they
weren't
going to
come after
retaliated.
Ida and Gertrude.
Yeah, that's super fucking smart.
So, like, the protection that this allowed them and it blew my mind. I didn't realize that this was something. And again, this was because they were noble women.
They definitely had the privilege to be able to do this.
Yeah, but it was actually a very savvy political move.
Yeah.
This extra protection from the monarchy would come in handy because the king was not super happy that Ida and Gertrude had kind of removed themselves from the marriage pool and wanted the women to kick the habit.
No.
Kelly is
some of your other
disgusting.
Ones have kind of like I've been on board with that one. No.
That one was my best one, though. That was my like a little too smart for the room one.
Fine.
It was decent. Thank you for validating me. So despite the fierce pushback, Gertrude and Ida committed to their monastic lives. And when Ida died 12 years later, Gertrude became the abbess. Nepo baby. That being said, like, I know I've kind of like given Gertrude like the rich privileged girl vibes up until this point, but she was incredibly devoted to service of God and particularly other people and people in need.
And cats.
So
I assume cats come in at some point.
Oh, we'll get to the fucking cats. So Gertrude was incredibly service focused, dedicating herself to helping the sick, elderly, and poor while delegating administrative duties to other trusted nuns and monks. She's like, I get I'm the abbess, but I don't have time for paperwork. I'm going to nurse this sick person back to health. I'm going to help the people who actually need, like, I'm going to be on the floor doing the damn thing. If Gertrude wasn't serving those in need, she was reading and studying scriptures. Because again, she was one of those privileged people who could read.
Right. And she's doing the damn thing.
Doing the damn thing. So the Abbey of Nivelles also became an important place for travelers as Gertrude welcomed everyone from the religious to the non-religious, from the local to the foreign, including Irish monks. So this is where like the Irish come in. And actually it was very common at this time for Irish monks to kind of be like a little nomadic. They were always traveling everywhere and like spreading the word or whatever. So her abbey actually became a well-known an important site for these Irish monks to stop because she was so welcoming to everyone.
Yeah, that they were like, hey, this is a safe place. Like, we're not going to be persecuted here. It is us, mm-hmm. you know, you can actually rest.
So she even gave some of the land that belonged to the abbey to an Irish monk so he could build a monastery in nearby Fosse. And like the abbey would eventually transform from an abbey to like a joint abbey monastery. So monks and nuns served there. So when she wasn't busy studying or caring for those in need, Gertrude made time for the odd miracle. Because you wouldn't be a saint without some miracles.
Yeah, I think you need three.
Well, I could only find two that were officially credited to Gertrude. But again, this is the 1600s. And I'll talk about it later, but everyone was kind of a saint at this time. Like, it felt like the threshold for becoming a saint was pretty low. So the first miracle was occurred while Gertrude was standing in prayer before the altar of Pope Sixtus II.
I do guess you only fantastic do need name. Two miracles. I'm looking at how you get canonized as a saint.
No, and I know it's supposed to be three, no, but she two. Is recognized as a
saint. It's only two.
It's two? Oh, I thought it was three.
At least two.
I guess three is a little excessive. Like, if you've completed two miracles, it's like, how many fucking miracles do you need? One is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So she's praying at the altar of Pope Sixtus II, who's also a martyr. And a flaming ball appeared above her head and chilled above her for like 30 minutes. It like appeared above her head, descended, and then just floated above her head for half an hour.
Hmm.
The miracle being that she didn't instantly shit herself or catch on fire.
I probably would have done both.
It's just flaming shit everywhere. Exactly. Throw me on someone's doorstep. The second miracle occurred when one day her biographer, Anonymous Annie, his friend and a crew were sailing the sea on monastery business. Suddenly, the sea turned violent and a great sea monster appeared. According to the Annie Anonymous, quote, the sailors turned to their idols, because again, paganism was still very common at this time. While the biographer's friend cried out to Gertrude for help, because he was a believer. As soon as he did this, the storm ceased and the monster descended back into the sea. The miracle here is that a man admitted he needed a woman's help. So we have two miracles. Not repeatable, not replicable at
exactly.
all.
Okay, so I lied. So it's weird. To become a saint, there's like four steps. And one of them is to perform a miracle and then become a blessed. And then you have to perform two more to become a saint. But I think they came up with those rules later. And so,
yeah.
Well, one, you don't have to be blessed if you're considered a martyr. You just need the two miracles. And yeah, like I think they kind of like grandfathered in some of those older saints. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Like
continue.
I said, this is also a time where Catholicism is still like getting a foothold. And I think it was really important for branding and for spreading the religion.
You're
to have
a saint.
A lot of saints.
You're a saint. You're a saint.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember Olga of Kyiv?
Yeah.
She's a goddamn saint because
yes,
she built a
she
bunch
is.
Of churches and set a fuck ton of people on fire.
This is kind of, the era of the Catholic Church where you could kind of buy your way into sainthood.
Well, spreading Catholicism
was
huge. Like, they needed it. Like, they needed those brand ambassadors. And they needed people building abbeys. They needed people building churches and monasteries. So if you did that,
I mean, you're still your way into a sainthood.
Yeah. Now, to Gertrude's credit, like,
yeah, Gertrude is not.
She did the work.
Yeah.
Like, she seemed like she was a person who really seemed to care about other people and to care about helping those in need. So, like, as much as I kind of like side eye Catholicism, as someone who grew up going to Catholic
Gertrude
school,
Gertrude is a genuinely nice person, it seems.
She's a good person. So. As part of her devotion, not only to God, but to those in need, Gertrude frequently fasted and held vigils. And like holding a vigil, you stay up praying. You don't go to bed. You stay up. You don't eat. Like it's incredibly exhausting.
Yeah, it is.
And unfortunately, this likely contributed to her death at only 33 years old. Which, like, for the 600s.
I don't know if that's old or young.
But the point is her lifestyle and the trials she put her body through hastened her death. Like, they contributed to her dying when she did. So according to Annie Anonymous, her body had become, quote, exhausted by a life of charity, fasting, and prayer. And because too much abstinence and keeping of vigils, her body was sorely exhausted with serious illness. Gertrude knew the toll her work was. Too much abstinence. If she drank a little more, if she had a little more sex, if she sinned like a little bit.
That was a thing that people used to be like, you need to have sex. Like, that's why you're sick. And I'm like, wait, what?
That's what they told men with frigid wives. Miss, you have to fuck your husband. And you have to let him do doggy style. And you have to call his name. And also you have to call him the grandmaster of dick sweat. Like, I don't know. I'm a doctor. You have to listen to me. Grand Dick Master General. I'm writing a prescription right now.
Anyways.
God damn it. So Gertrude was very aware of the toll her work was taking on her, predicting she would die soon. And she spent her final days in her office reading scripture and doing penance. Part of this penance was wearing a hair shirt.
A what?
Which is exactly what it fucking sounds like.
Okay.
A hair shirt was a shirt made of rough animal hair that was designed to be the itchiest, most uncomfortable garment known to man.
What the fuck did Gertrude think she did that she needed that punishment?
Dude, we're so into the suffering. Suffering brings you closer to God because you are born with sin. You must pay for that sin, and you spend your life trying to atone for that original sin.
This is why Catholicism. Why I question things.
I have so many questions, but like self-flagellation.
Yeah, I know. But still, like, she literally, she lived the majority of her life in service to God. And even at the end, she was like, I still need to put myself through hell.
Yeah. The hair scratching against the wearer's skin was considered a form of penance. And actually, a lot of religions do have a pain component to them.
I know. I'm not even saying just Catholicism, but just like, in general, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, I'm like, if anyone shouldn't have had to wear a hair shirt,
it's Gertrude.
Gertrude, you're fine. So according to family lore, she sent a messenger to the monastery at Fosse to ask the abbot when she would die. He predicted that she would die the next day, March 17th, during Holy Mass. Quote, she may pass joyously because blessed Bishop Patrick with the chosen angels of God are prepared to receive her. Fulfilling the prophecy, Gertrude died on March 17th, 659. And she was buried as requested in her hair shirt and veil.
She got buried in her fucking hair shirt.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There is life after death. So really it was symbolic because her body is not a vessel for her soul anymore. So it's cool. I don't think she took the hair shirt up with her to heaven.
I mean,
that would fucking suck. Are you kidding me?
It really depends on what religion you're talking about, because like Egyptians believed that anything that you were buried with, you took with you.
Right. But
for Catholicism. Exactly. Your soul, your immortal soul is going to heaven to be with God. Your body no longer matters.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't speak to medieval Catholicism because like this is before they even came up with purgatory.
Yeah, so who knows?
So before her death, Gertrude appointed her niece, Wilfrid. I'm going to call her Wilfrid.
Okay.
As the new abbess, Wilfrid's father and Gertrude's brother, Grimald, he comes back, He had actually gotten himself into trouble with a failed usurpation of the Austrasian throne.
Good
so
job.
Grimald's over there fucking around and finding out. So appointing Wulfred as abbess protected her and her property against retaliation and horny suitors. So it was kind of that paying it forward. So Ida had been protected by becoming a nun. She had protected Gertrude the same way. And then Gertrude protected her niece from her brother's fuckery the same way.
Nice.
This also shows the incredible influence that Gertrude had within the Catholic Church, that she was able to like
name someone,
assign her niece, and just be like, she's the abbess now, deal with it. For her devotion to those in need, Gertrude is recognized as the patron saint of travelers, widows, the sick, and the mentally ill.
They just kind of tacked everyone on there, didn't they?
She's also the patron saint of gardeners. But it didn't, like, factor into the story, so I didn't include it.
I mean, neither do cats.
My next section is titled, Where are the Cats At?
Yeah, that was my question. I was like, wait, I thought she was the patron saint of cats. Like, what the fuck, Emily?
As CatGenie.com states, quote, so, like, you know, that's cool and all, but where did the cats come in? Come for the Catholicism, stay for the cats, am I right?
Oh my God. Cat Genie is right up your alley.
Cat Genie, please sponsor us.
Sponsor Emily.
Sponsor me as an individual. That is the shit I would write.
Yeah,
I love
100%.
It so much. God bless you, Cat Genie. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Anyway, well, according to uscatholic.org, quote, despite what the craft makers of Etsy may claim, there's no official documentation or old tradition naming St. Gertrude of Nivelles as the patron saint of cats.
Wait, why do they blame Etsy creators?
Because if you like cats, like there's so much St. Gertrude stuff that depicts her with cats that is marketed towards cat ladies. That's marketed towards this idea of her being the patron saint of cats. Despite that kind of evolution of her image, there's nothing traditional that says she's the patron saint of cats. There's nothing in her story that inherently or directly ties her to
cats. I kind of wonder if someone just like made it as like a joke for someone and then someone else saw it and was like, oh, I want one of those. You know what I mean? And then it just spiraled out of control.
So there is actually a logical progression to why she's become associated with cats. But I love uscatholic.org is like, take that, Etsy.
Yeah, right.
How dare you, small creators? We serve the big creator. So the first written association between Gertrude and cats didn't actually first appear until 1982.
All right.
Still 80s.
Still pre-Etsy.
When the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York published a catalog on Metropolitan cats.
That still doesn't have anything to do with Gertrude.
Well, they referred to her as the patron saint of cats in this catalog Metropolitan cats.
So, like, out of nowhere, the Metropolitan Museum of Art was just like, oh, Gertrude, cats.
Yes.
Okay.
As they're publishing a catalog about cats. Which I have questions. And if anyone has a copy of that, please send it.
I'm just curious, like, yeah, so that, like, how that, again, where did they get their information? Like, it couldn't have just started in the 80s. That seems so weird.
A lot of good shit started in the 80s.
Still weird.
80s music.
Still
cocaine.
Weird. Still weird. Also, I'm pretty
Metropolitan
sure.
Metropolitan cats, apparently.
I'm pretty sure cocaine was pre-80s.
Yeah, but it became cool in the 80s.
That's not what we're talking about.
Well, it's when Metropolitan Cats became cool in the 80s. It was Weekend at Bernie's.
You understand my point, though. Like, you know, like, that seems like something, like, they would, like, why? Like, why just randomly decide Gertrude and cats?
It was actually not so random.
Okay.
Gertrude's associated with cats does not necessarily come out of nowhere. So
you made it sound like it came out of nowhere. You said it showed up in the 80s out of nowhere.
Written in the 80s.
You written. Have misled me.
You know what?
Cruel
I
lady.
Have notes. I'm going to read them and you can choose to listen and absorb the information.
I'm just so hurt. No, I'm kidding. My eye
next week,
itches.
Tune in when Kelly covers the patron saint of dogs.
Yeah.
To make up for me.
Except for they're actually going to be dogs in the story.
Did you know? Have you noticed that my dogs have not been in this room
yeah,
the entire
like,
time I've been
fuck
telling
you,
the story?
Emily.
They're so mad. So, as is common knowledge, illness was rampant in medieval Europe, making Gertrude as the patron saint of illness a popular name to invoke. So, you know, it's like Saint Anthony is the patron saint of lost things. So if you're looking for something, you're like, Saint Anthony, help me. If you're sick, you're like, Saint Gertrude, God, help me.
Yeah.
Rats carrying infected fleas are credited with one of the most infamous epidemics in world history, the bubonic plague, which decimated between 30% and 50% of Europe's population.
And people got
so
cats.
The association with rats and illness led to people to call upon Gertrude to help banish rats.
Yep, I get
because they
it
were
now.
The embodiment of illness and filth, and they were carriers of disease. A job traditionally done by my favorite felines. All of them, cats of all shapes and sizes. Bring in the servals. Eventually, banishing illness led to banishing rats, led to protecting and helping cats. So that is the evolution of how Gertrude became associated with cats, because cats are the ultimate protectors of health and well-being, because they are the perfect living organisms.
I beg to differ, but sure.
Regardless of the origins, Saint Gertrude of Nivelles has become the honorary patron saint of cats to cat lovers across the globe.
Aww.
And my new personal, like, if I'm ever in trouble, I'm just gonna be like, Gertrude, help me.
And so other next, people will be March like, who the 17th, fuck are you talking about?
Instead of donning green and shamrocks, don your favorite cat-haired covered shirt, which for me could be literally any shirt. Open a can of Fancy Feast and give a shout out to Gertrude of Nivelles, the ultimate Catholic cat lady.
Except not really.
Also, little legacy side note, Gertrude was not the only saint in her family. Her mom is considered a saint. She's the patron saint of the French village bearing her name.
Oh. I didn't know there was a French
Bega,
village bearing her name.
Bega, her sister, whose line eventually produced Charlemagne, also achieved sainthood, which is probably not surprising because her father-in-law was also a saint.
Oh.
Saints on saints on saints. Again, they were giving it away.
Saints all the way down.
Turtles all the way down. Holy turtles all the way down. But I mean, Gertrude, like, again, regardless of your feelings about Catholicism and religion, like the legitimacy
she
of the miracles, she helped people. She really did care about people, and she lived her life in service to those in need, which I find really admirable.
Yeah, like that it is. It's one of those things, like, yeah, regardless of how you view her religion and her beliefs, she still did good things.
Yeah. And actually, so the warming shelter where I volunteer sometimes, that is a decidedly Christian organization. It was founded by this couple. They were both working in the medical industry and they were really frustrated with all of the roadblocks that were presented when they were trying to help people in need, where it's like, well, you know, liability and this and that. And it's like, I thought we were here to help people. So they started the warming shelter because they felt it was their Christian duty to help those in need. And I'm like, wow. Normally when I hear someone say, like, it's their duty as a Christian to do something, it means buying a jet.
Yeah. Or it's like a belittling thing. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's my duty as a Christian to help you. It's like, excuse you.
Yeah, or it's, well, it's my duty as a Christian to show you your sinful ways of, you know, being gay. And like, I don't know, I just feel like the mantle of Christianity has been so weaponized against those in need, against the marginalized, against people that were, you know, we're who supposed actually to needed love.
It? Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's cool to see them taking it kind of in the way that I grew up with Christianity and Catholicism, as Jesus was a hippie. He loved everyone. He hung out with sex workers and lepers, and he helped those in need. And that, like, that was his whole jam. And I don't know, getting out into the world, I'm like, I feel like we were reading from a different book.
Yeah, exactly. Where you're like, you know, did I miss a day or like several, or did you?
Did I miss the shitty, selfish suit wearing day of Catholic school? Where I was supposed to get people to pay me to pray their cancer away until they went completely bankrupt and then refused any meaningful treatment.
Yeah.
And then bought a jet.
I definitely missed that.
No? Yeah. I was probably cuddling with my cat that day, doing better things.
Exactly. Important things. That was actually a really interesting story.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Again, I stumbled upon it completely on accident. I don't know why I've never looked up the patron saint of cats, but I have a new hero. But Kelly,
yes.
Who are you whining about today?
I am whining about Mary Ann Brown Patton.
Mary Ann Brown Patton Esquire the Third Kaminsky.
No. So, Mary Ann Brown, it was very interesting because, like, the first, like, four articles I read were all like, we don't know anything about her until she got married, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, three were like, so this is what we know. And I was like, thank you. So, Mary Ann Brown was born in Boston, Massachusetts, into a large seafaring family, which was pretty common. This is in... Did I not write a year that she was born? Of course I fucking didn't.
Well, while you're looking that up, shout out to one of our favorite Canadians, Chelsea, who actually lives in Boston. She's a masshole now.
A masshole?
Yeah, that's what they call people from Massachusetts, massholes.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is 18th. She was born April 15th, 1860.
All right. It was the 60s.
This is not the right person. Never mind. Give me 1 second.
Wait, are you covering the wrong person?
No, the first person I clicked on was not the right person. Mary Ann Brown Patton is the correct person. It's 1837 is when she was born.
Okay. It was like a Ruth Ellis thing where it's like, yep. Well, there's a Ruth Ellis who's a black lesbian activist and there's a Ruth Ellis who's a white blonde murderer.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is not the person I wanted. She was born April 6th, 1837. We're Victorian era. We've moved from medieval to Victorian. Boston, Massachusetts, Victorian era-ish. Her father was George and her mother was Elizabeth, which is like very on brand for the time. They immigrated from England shortly before Mary was born. They already had several children, again, as per the time period.
Per the lack of birth control.
Yeah. So Mary was born into a larger family and George was a seaman by trade. Most of his children, at least his male children, went into maritime related work, whether they were seamen themselves or caulkers, because you have to have caulkers on your ship, otherwise your ship's gonna sink. That was in one of the articles I read, and I'm like, I need to keep that because that's actually really funny.
Well, I'm not surprised he was a seaman with that many fucking kids. Okay. Heyo.
Oh. At 16 years old.
How many cockers can one cock on a ship that can't cock seamen?
semen.
Oh my God. Did I tell you? When I went to Michigan, we went to the Mineral Museum, and Michigan, you know, especially in the UP, has like a rich history in like mining, but also boats and shipping and that kind of thing. So there was actually a garden outside the museum called the Seaman's Garden, or the Seaman Garden.
Nice.
And we laughed about it for a good 20 minutes because we were grown ass women in our 30s.
You're like, that's where the men go to make a little deposit of the semen. And then you just walk away.
And it was definitely a polka stop, and I definitely saved it.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
The semen garden of the University of Michigan.
Okay, you ready? Are you ready to continue now?
Semen. Okay, now I'm ready.
Okay. So at the ripe old age of 16, Mary would get married to Captain Joshua Patton. Originally from Rockland, Maine, he was already a master mariner. He was only 26 years old. He's only 10 years older than her. Even though he was also fairly young, he was considered a master mariner. So she kind of married into the family trade, so to speak.
Okay. You know how I feel about Josh's. So I'm going to ask a question that I hope I'm going to get a good answer to. Can we like him?
He doesn't do much in this story, to be honest.
Okay, great.
It's one of those, he's not a bad guy.
Never trusted Josh.
It's okay. It's Joshua.
That's why he went by Joshua, because he's like, oh, no.
He's like, I know
Josh's.
Exactly. Oh, so... A year into her marriage, her husband would get asked to like sign on. Basically, there was a ship called the Neptune's Car, and he like the captain had. It's okay. So I read into the history of this ship, and this ship sounded like it had some issues. But basically, the previous captain had been mutinied. So when they got back into shore, they needed a new captain.
Oh God.
That's like the very short and simple, one of the articles I read was like, the ship was cursed. And I was like, this is cursed. That is cursed. And then I went into the Mummy 2.
That's what happens when you need one mode of transportation after a different mode of transportation.
Yeah. But so he got enlisted as the captain, and they were only a year into their marriage, and it was really interesting because depending on which article I read, it was either like she wanted to go with him or he didn't want to leave her alone. But either way, she ended up joining him on this first voyage of him captaining the Neptune's Car. And together they would spend this entire journey together at sea. So they would go from New York to San Francisco to China to London and then all the way back to New York. They were at sea for a while. But what's interesting about this is during this time, this is again Victorian era, in the Western world, even in Victorian era, women crew on a ship, let alone crewing a ship, was rare. This was still like borderline women on ships are bad luck territory, you know, but it was definitely seen as like improper to have like your wife on board with you and travel. Like it was definitely not like something.
Well, your
that
wife
was
on
done.
A ship with a bunch of cockers
exactly.
and semen. It's just not proper.
But Mary was determined to like make herself useful. So not only did she have like some background knowledge because she grew up in a family of maritime people, but during this basically half a year long voyage, she would spend her time reading in the little, I guess there was a little library on the ship. Like this was a fairly large vessel. And she brought some books with her, but basically she was like, she taught herself medicine and she taught herself how to navigate using sextants and compasses and charts. And basically she learned all these things so that she could be useful for her husband. Or, like, if her husband needed her.
Boats are so sexy.
I know, right? They
Boats
have all
are
these
so
weird
sexual.
Names.
We've got cockers, sextants. We've got semen, we've got sextants.
But, yeah, she learned just a bunch of stuff to be helpful around the ship. Because I think it was one of those, like, if I'm going to be here, I'm going to do something. Like, I'm not just going to, like, sit idly by kind of a thing.
Good for her, because I would definitely sit idly by.
I would probably be too busy getting sick from motion sickness to do anything. So I also agree.
I would be hanging out with the ship cats.
Yeah. So the first journey would go fine. Like nothing to report. They made it all the way around and back. Then he was asked to crew, again, the Neptune's car, because this was the time where, like, at least most people didn't own their own boats. A lot of times they were owned by companies who would then hire out captains, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. And so he was asked again to crew the same ship, the Neptune's car. However, this time Mary was now 19, so this was about 3 years into their marriage, and she was pregnant with their first child. But she was still going to go with him. She was like, no, like, I'm coming. Like, it was one of those, like, this isn't a discussion. Like, I'm coming with you. Like, what are you talking about?
So, and then he's like, fine, but if we have to dig 100 graves, I know who's fucking doing it.
Me. you know, like a man should. Anyways, so something was up with this voyage, like, from the beginning. Like, the trouble started before they left the dock, before shit was even in the ship. Joshua's first mate, like the one he had picked to come along on this journey with him, broke his leg. Was out, like, could not get on the ship. And so the people that owned the boat, or at least owned the cargo that was going onto the boat, which was Foster and Nickerson, which I was like, all right, that's Nickerson. Anyways,
Nickerson, that's a great cat name.
Is it right? Anyways, they didn't want to lose any time. You know, money is time. Time is money. Blah, blah, blah. So they assigned a guy named William Keeler. No one really knew who he was. Like, I don't know if he was I assume he was actually a sailor, but I don't know if he was, like, from a pool of people that are just like, okay, these are all people that are, you know, were first mates on other ships. Like, there wasn't a lot of background information on this guy, but basically, at least to Joshua and to Mary, this is just some random dude that they're like, okay, this is now your first mate. Make it work.
That being said, you could be a confident guy at this time.
Oh yeah, exactly. And just like walk up. Exactly. So
you can be a confident guy today and still do whatever the fuck you want.
In some contexts. I'm not going to say in every context, but in some contexts. But you can be, I think in some contexts, you can be a confident woman and get away with a lot too. But the trouble would just kind of continue. Like, before they even left port, Joshua started not feeling well. But again, Foster and Nickerson were kind of just like, and, like, let's go. Like, here's your first mate. Get on the ship. Go. So this time they weren't going, like, around the world. I think they were just going New York to San Francisco, so it's still a decent trip, but, like, shorter. They're not going all the way, like, to China and back. But yeah, so everyone gets on the ship. Joshua, the new first mate, the rest of the crew, the pregnant Mary, everyone's getting on board. So the Neptune's car, like I said, it was a pretty decent sized ship. And it was relatively new. This was only its actual, like, it's actually only its, like, third voyage. So the first voyage was the one that got mutinied. That wasn't Joshua. And then it was Joshua. And now it's Joshua again. But basically, Foster and Nickerson were they wanted to make even more money, as rich people do. And They along with, like, some other people that owned similar ships, were like, all right, all of us are sending ships at about roughly the same time that are rough. Like, Foster and Nickerson were like, well, our ship's the newest. Like, it's the best. I bet it's the fastest. And yeah, they made a bet. Basically, like, four companies were like, all right, we each have a ship going New York to San Francisco via the southern tip of South America, because this is pre-Panama Canal. So you got to go all the way around. And basically, yeah, Foster and Nickerson was like, our ship is going to win. Like, we're going to get into port first. And so, yeah, like we're willing to risk our crew's lives to make more money, basically.
Okay. That is the part that pisses me off. Oh, yeah. It's one thing if you're like,
if you're the person on the ship. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm doing the thing, but these guys are sitting back collecting their money, being like, my crew's going to get there first or they're going to fucking die trying.
Yeah, exactly. This is the Titanic. Like, oh, it's unsinkable. Just go faster. It's unsinkable. Just go faster. It's like, no,
don't worry about it. Fuck it. Fuck it. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Bulkheads don't have to reach all the way to the top. The water will just stop filling the ship. It's only the ocean.
Yeah. So, I have an itch. Sorry. So Will, WK, Will, William Keeler, the rando first mate. Yeah, he turned out to be like an asshole real quick. Basically, in just like a few weeks, you know, he was found sleeping through his shifts. He would set courses through things that would run them into reefs. He had to be ordered to do like simple tasks that should just be expected of him. And he outright refused to do certain tasks, such as like putting the sails out and stuff like that, that is just expected of everyone on a goddamn ship. Joshua,
why did you get on the ship, friend?
Because he probably got paid extra. Because this is the rando that this is the first mate that they were just kind of like, here you go, here's your first mate, now leave.
Oh my god.
Joshua eventually got so sick of his shit and like was like, okay, you're directly disobeying me and I am the captain, that he put him in chains and put him in his cabin and was like, you're done. Like, you're
good.
Done. You go
put
over
that
here.
Bitch in timeout.
Unfortunately, this meant Joshua like didn't have a first mate, which means he didn't really have anyone to help him. So basically, a lot of times what'll happen is the captain will run during the day, the first mate runs at night, you know, like, and so like, so people can sleep, but somebody's always manning the ship. Joshua, like, this meant Joshua didn't have that. So this meant Joshua stayed up all night to handle the navigation because according to like the records, like there are newspaper articles and stuff, which are hit or miss. But basically like the second mate was illiterate. The third mate was just not intelligent enough to like navigate, which is pretty common. You think about it, like most of the crew is going to be just like lay people. The only people, yeah, usually that knew how to navigate are going to be like the captain and the first mate. That was actually pretty common back then.
Well, and navigating is a very specialized, like people who are good at it did it badly. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there's a lot of records kind of that go over like the, during this, like this part kind of going down that like southern, eastern, going south down the eastern side from New York going down. They were dealing with a lot of like snow and sleet and wind. And so, yeah, Joshua's like, I can't like just abandon my ship to go to sleep. So he was, even though he didn't feel well, because remember, he didn't feel well, like as they were leaving, he stayed up all day and all night, like for as long as he could to try to keep the ship on course. Increasingly, he had to rely on Mary's help to kind of confirm the course and position and speed. And he kind of slowly recognized like, oh damn, like she knows what she's doing. And he realized that she was actually a better mathematician and navigator than he was.
Wow.
Even like, and he kind of had this realization that even though he was like sleep deprived, he kind of had this realization that it was like, okay, no, she's even better than me. Like when I'm at my best, like you even said, like navigation is a very specific skill. And yeah, some people just have the brain for math and like those kind of things. And Mary was very much one of those people. So by the eighth, after a week of staying up with like minimal resting, it became clear that Joshua was literally out of his mind, and not just from exhaustion. At this point, whatever sickness he had clearly caught up to him. And after navigating into the Lemaire Strait, he collapsed on deck. At this point, he had developed pneumonia, which exacerbated his undiagnosed ailment that he'd started the voyage with, which most people spoiler alert, he makes it through this voyage. And so it turns out he had tuberculosis meningitis.
Fucking God.
Dude be fucked, basically. it's not good.
Oh,
my God. Yeah, so he literally just, passed out. He was literally, just gone. Not dead, but,
he lasted as long as he did.
Oh God, yeah,
while
right?
fighting TB and never sleeping.
And he collapsed, and Mary immediately took control with the second mate's help. The second mate was illiterate and couldn't, navigate, but he still knows what to do. So together they parked the ship south of the storms that had been rocking their boat just to kind of get a little bit of calm so that Mary could begin taking care of her husband. She shaved his head. She washed him as best she could, got him into bed, everything like that. His situation was dire. Best guess of today's scholars, because I can guarantee there's probably no way Mary knew this. Most people think that at this point the infection had probably reached his brain. And so not only was he delirious from exhaustion, but he at this point had also become blind and partially deaf. No idea what was going on.
That would be so terrifying to be on this ship with the one person who's supposed to know what's going on is kind of dying in front of you. Yeah. I mean, they're completely incapacitated, and then it's your husband. And
oh yeah. And remember, she's 6 months pregnant too.
Yeah. And you don't know what to do. Here's
no,
the thing.
But she did. Cause she had been reading about it.
But I mean, with the illness, someone came to me and was like, oh, this is what he has. I'd be like, and what the fuck do I do about it?
Yeah. And I mean, sure, I'm pretty sure even for Mary, it's kind of just keep him as comfortable as you can.
Yeah.
Because when you're in the middle of the ocean, what else are you supposed to fucking do? So at this point, Mary kind of is in this weird position of not knowing what to do, what the best course of action is. And of course, this is when William hears word of mouth that the captain's health is failing, shit's going down on the ship. So this asshole, even though he is in chains in his room, he writes a letter to Mary, which I'm wow, what a pompous move to write her a letter. But I suppose if he's not allowed out of his room, there's really nothing else he can do. But he writes a letter to Mary. He writes a letter to Mary reminding her of how perilous that southern coast of Africa can be, the Horn of Africa. There's a lot of stories about it.
Wait, do you mean South America?
Or South America, yeah. The Horn of South America, because they talk about it, because it can be I think it has something to do with the different tides and stuff that come in. Obviously, the Panama Canal got around that, and that was kind of one of the points of the Panama Canal, that, and it cuts the journey in half. But we didn't have that back then. We're pre-Panama Canal. But yeah, so he writes her a letter being the waters we're coming up on are pretty perilous. What are you going to do? I'm totally willing to help you out if you just want to let me out. I'm totally willing to become captain and take control. And she responded to him by basically being my husband didn't trust you as first mate, and you had so much trouble being first mate that I'm not going to give you a higher command than that when you couldn't even handle the burden of the first command you had. So it was one, my husband didn't trust you, so I'm not going to trust you. But two, you were a shitty first mate. You're not going to be captain.
Do you have some ice for that burn, bitch?
Yeah. So when he heard this, the first thing William tried to do was try to get the other men to mutiny against Mary. And when Mary found that out, she called all the men to the deck and was this is what's going on. I would really appreciate if you stand behind me and my husband. And they did. Every single man stood with her, obviously, except for William, because he's kind of an asshole. But yeah, no, they were like, no, yeah, we definitely trust you over William, like, because it kind of sounds like William was not necessarily part of the crew prior, you know, like he was just kind of like this random guy that the company picked out versus, you know, Joshua picking out. And so, yeah, they all stood by her, and they were like, yeah, okay, like you're our acting commander, essentially. Yeah, and at this point, Joshua is still out of commission, and Mary's like, okay, like, we need to keep moving. Like, we want to get to San Francisco. Like, one, I need to get my husband help. But, like, two, because, yeah, like, some people are like, well, you could have pulled into a different port. But it's like, one, they don't know those ports. And two, like, they're expected in San Francisco. So Mary's like, okay, let's do this. And she starts steering the ship through the waters around the Cape of South America.
America.
Yep. Don't worry, I got it. dodging as much inclement weather as she can. Like, there's glaciers. Like, she's literally, like, she's playing, like, you know, I'm trying to think of the name of the game.
Frogger.
Yeah, she's playing Frogger with icebergs. And, like, she is. She's just,
something
like...
Something even the Titanic couldn't
exactly
do.
So and she's still trying to, like, make... Not, like, great time. She's not, like, speeding, but she's still trying to, like, get there as quick as possible because she knows her husband needs help. So as they come around and they're over on the Chilean side, as they near the city, the Chilean city of Valparaiso, her husband's fever finally breaks and he becomes lucid. Like, he can see again, he can hear again. And he's lucid. However, he still wasn't, like, doing well. And it was clear, like, he wasn't thinking straight because he very quickly let William out and then gave and gave him command of the ship.
No.
So.
Oh, Joshua, honey.
If this is that's really the only bad decision Joshua makes. And it's probably, you know.
He's really sick. So I'm not going to. I'm not going to hold it against him.
And if you doubted William and in his sincerity to be an asshole, he very quickly showed just how much of an asshole he was. So Mary was still doing most of the navigating at this point because Joshua was still very ill. He's still in bed. So it was Mary kind of being like, okay, here's the navigation. Here's where we're going. Like... I'm trusting you to steer the ship, but, like, here's everything. And very quickly, William stopped letting Mary, like, be on deck, and he stopped letting her, like, take navigation measurements and see where they were going. And he's like, no, I'm, like, I can do this. I'm the captain, blah, 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 you know, whatever. And what Mary didn't know right away, but, like, what we know now after the fact is that he began to steer them into port instead of to continue around to San Francisco. And those were his direct orders. Like, they were like, no, like, keep going. Like, just keep going north. Like, it's not just, you know. But obviously, like, he's going to be arrested probably for trying to start a mutiny when they get to San Francisco. So he's probably like, this is my best bet. Like, I'm getting off here. Anyways. And so, like, Mary kind of, like, noticed... Even though, like, she wasn't allowed on deck and stuff, she kind of noticed, like, something's not quite right. So she, like, had her husband kind of, like, check in on William. And yeah, like, her husband was like, yeah, why are we heading into port? You know, whatever. And her husband, like, set William straight and, you know, it was fine. But after that, William was like, okay, fine, Mary, like, you have to stay in your quarters now. Like, I'm captain. You have to stay in your quarters. And, you know, it sounded like he kind of was just like, oh, well, you're 6 months pregnant. Like, you shouldn't be wandering around a ship, you know, like trying to sound compassionate.
Just being an incompetent piece of shit.
Yeah. What William didn't know is that Mary was not only incredibly competent, but apparently incredibly handy because, according to family lore, Mary, like, somehow made her own compass just out of, like, stuff that they had in their room to keep track of like where they were going, because apparently she was like, no one fucks with me and my husband and I'm getting him to San Francisco. So she was able to kind of like, she was kind of able to track. And when she was able to like show her husband again that like, hey, we're still not like on course, like he's not listening to you. Joshua had him demoted. Like he was like, you are now like not a first anything. Like you are the lowest member of the ship. He had him put back in chains. And this time, instead of being kept in his room, he was put like below deck. They were like, you get
in
to,
the brig.
Yeah, like you get to hang out with the cargo. This is how we feel about you because you're ignoring direct orders multiple times at this point.
Oh my God. You know what? Like, here's the thing. William fucked up. He was punished for it. And he had every opportunity to like man up and do the right thing. Like, he got a second chance, and he was just like,
and then he fucked up again. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to be a dick to the pregnant lady who's going to fucking MacGyver a compass
right
in her room.
Which I love. Like, I don't know how she did it, but I love it. While probably still caring for a sick, brain-challenged husband.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand how that happened. How do you even make a compass? Like,
magnets?
Who has magnets? Who just has magnets? She's on a fucking ship dodging icebergs. Like, they talk about pregnancy brain.
I know, Jesus Christ.
Gave her superpowers.
Unfortunately, like, soon after the whole William thing ended, Joshua, like, relapsed. He collapsed again. And at this point, yeah, would go into like total blindness and deafness. So, Mary decided, she's like, I'm not about this shit anymore. Like, we're getting to San Francisco and like, we're fuck this. Like, basically she's like, I am so far done with this shit. I no longer care.
I'm angry.
Oh yeah.
I'm pregnant. And I'm competent as hell.
So at this point, she's just like, I'm not even going to fuck around anymore and like give someone else any control. Like, I am taking full command of this ship and we are going to San Francisco. And yeah, like basically once she did that, there wasn't really any other incidents.
I love the only upset was when her husband got a little better and tried to like take, you know, do his job.
It was like, when he first got sick, there was a little bit of trouble. It was dealt with. And then, yeah, when he got a little bit better, he was like, no, like, my wife shouldn't be running the ship. The first mate should be, like, put the first mate in charge. And then just like, no.
And again, that's not a comment on Joshua's ability as a captain. Like, he was clearly not doing well.
No. So on November 15th, 1856, 137 days after they had started their journey, the Neptune's car pulled into the port of San Francisco. The 19-year-old Mary had captained the boat for 56 of those days. So under half the journey, but still that's a decent amount. And through some of the most severe weather the region had seen in this season. She had not changed clothes in nearly 2 months prior to arrival, because when she took over that second time after, when she was like, I'm done with this shit, she was like, I'm done with modesty. I'm done with like worrying about what I look like, what other people care. Like, I am just fucking done.
Okay. I think we've all seen women, especially moms, who are done.
Yeah.
And when they go into beast mode like that, it is scary and fascinating all at the same time to see Mary go into full like pregnant beast mode. Mm-hmm. What a sight to behold, because that woman was having none of it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those sailors, those seamen were so fucking well behaved because none of them were gonna piss her off.
Yeah. So when the ship arrived in San Francisco, Mary stood at the helm and navigated the ship into port. Onlookers were stunned because, you know, like back then, ships coming into port was kind of a big deal. And she was an instant celebrity in the press due to her gender and what she accomplished, something she wasn't prepared for and she didn't want. Oh, also, as a side note, the Neptune's car still beat three of the other four boats that were in this like race. So like one beat her, but still like they almost had a mutiny. They stopped for a little while. Like her husband almost died and she still beat three of the four other ships. Just saying.
What the actual fuck?
We're also going to take a brief pause to talk about William here. Unfortunately, when they got into port...
Yeah, what happens to that asshole?
Absolutely nothing. He had made friends with like what the person that was feeding him or something. No one really is actually really quite sure who helped him, but like someone, like when they pulled into port, someone freed him and he jumped overboard and just like swam away so that he wouldn't get arrested.
Dude, what a bitch.
Because he would have been arrested for probably treason at that point.
What a whingy little bitch.
Yeah. So once they were like off the ship and everything, as I said, Mary became a national sensation. A lot of newspapers would arrive to interview her. And like, it's funny because like both of the major articles that I read were like, yeah, the newspapers got a lot of facts wrong. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right for a newspaper. But despite like the media attention, Mary would actually struggle to pay for Joshua's care because remember, he's still sick at this point. So Foster and Nickerson, the company that like had hired them, refused to pay his wages because
not even his normal pay.
Yeah, nope, they didn't pay him at all, and it was only after like public outcry, after people heard like Mary's story and stuff, like after even though some of the newspapers were wrong. That eventually the insurance company was like, oh, we'll send you $1,000. The cargo that was on the ship. The cargo that was on the ship that she steered into the correct port was worth $350,000.
In back then money.
Yeah.
And they never paid him. Like the insurance company gave him some money, but the company who hired him never paid him.
Nope. And they never would. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I know it's a little late, but I say we mutiny against those two dudes. What was it, Foster and Nickerson. Fuck them.
Yeah, we're stealing your ship. Fuck you.
Oh my god, can we throw them overboard?
But so what,
William doesn't even get his comeuppance? Like, fuck all of this.
So because Mary is the Victorian lady that she fucking is, when the insurance company sent her the check, she sincerely thanked them. And then also thanked the rest of the crew of the Neptune's car.
Okay, like, they deserve the crew.
Oh, yeah, because they could have. They could have chosen to mutiny. They could have sided with William. Yeah. They could have totally fucked her over. But I just think it's funny thanks the insurance company because she's a goddamn Victorian lady.
She's a fucking lady.
And in fact, like, several times when the newspapers would, like, comment on things and like be like, oh, she's so amazing, da, da, da. She would say several times that she's like, I was just doing what any wife would have. And I'm like, no, honey, you did way more than a lot of wives would have.
She did a lot more than what a lot of wives part whatever could have.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. Like if I was in that situation, I wouldn't be able to fucking navigate. I would find the nearest beach the ship and then just be like, someone else fix this, please, dear God. We were not meant to be on the ocean.
Yeah. Unfortunately, things never really got better for the family. In fact, things got a lot worse. So after getting back, they would move Joshua and, well, Mary would move Joshua back to Boston where they had been living. But Joshua's condition continued to worsen to the point where, like, when Mary did give birth to a son, who she named Joshua Jr., Joshua wasn't even, like, coherent for it. Like, he never really knew. And Mary was like, I can't continue to care for you because now I have a baby. So he was committed to an asylum and would pass away within a few months. Shortly after losing her husband, Mary's father would be lost at sea.
What? Okay.
Yep.
Just threw that in there.
Yeah, don't worry.
Kelly saw my visual devastation and was like, BT dubs, her dad also died.
Mary never... I mean, she never really recovered from both of those losses. And unfortunately, she would actually contract tuberculosis herself the following year, which I mean, like, okay, it was going around. And on March 17th of 1860, so a day after my birthday, but many, many years before.
Oh, my God. That's Gertrude's feast day.
Yeah. Just shy of her 24th birthday. Yeah, I was like, don't get excited, Emily.
Don't fucking do this. Kelly, you have a choice. You can do the right thing.
I mean, this is kind of like last week when I was like, you could just stop your story here, Emily. Happy ending.
Yeah, but this affects me now.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm kidding. Mary would pass away from tuberculosis, and she would be buried next to her husband, Joshua. It didn't mention on her headstone, it didn't mention anything of what she did, but her deeds actually, like, aren't forgotten. There are a select few in the Mariner world that do remember what she did. And actually a century, so 100 years after the voyage she did, the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy in Kings Point, New York opened a hospital and they named it Patton Hospital. Not for her husband, but for her. And it said, in memory of the Florence Nightingale of the ocean, the woman whose courage and grace they would always seek to emulate. Because she did. She spent that entire time not only piloting a ship, but caring for her husband.
The odds were so frustratingly stacked against her. She is pregnant. She is watching her husband potentially die, which he eventually would. Like, this thing did kill him.
Yeah.
She's got this asshole who's trying to take over and make things worse. She's doing this thing that's not her job. She does it. She fucking does it all. She keeps her husband alive. She keeps William in line. She gets the ship where it needs to be in great time. And she gets a dead husband, a dead father, and she's dead at 24.
Right. Yeah, she gets her 10 seconds of fame because people are like, well, this is a fucking anomaly. And then no one gave a shit anymore. And it's like, Jesus.
She lived only
fucking
5 years after.
Yeah.
She got 5 years during which her husband and her father died. And, like, I hope
child.
Her kid survived and, like, had a good life and all that. But
I actually, she died if you want,
and her kid is orphaned.
One of the articles I read actually, like, went and did some research into Joshua Jr. So I have a little bit if you want it.
Okay, just
it's super short.
On a scale. Okay, just give it to me. Give it to me.
He was raised by his maternal grandmother and then briefly lived with two uncles. He worked as a carriage painter and then returned to his father's, like, where his father was born in Rockland. He was a laborer, lived in a poorhouse because, of course. And then he died in a freak drowning accident, but he was 41. Like, he lived a full life.
Okay, this is like Jaws 4, where like the sharks like, have a vendetta
the
against
sea
the Brody
just wants
family.
This family. That's
the
what
ocean
I've decided.
Wants to murder this family.
I know, like, it's funny because the person who wrote the other article was like, he died in a freak drowning accident. I'm telling you, research is divine, is what the person said. And I'm like, I want to know more. Like, what is a freak drowning accident? I have questions.
Yeah, was he in like a bathtub? Was he in like 3 inches of water?
But he did live a full, like, he was 41. So like he was an adult. He did okay. Yeah, unfortunately, like, he didn't do great because like his parents didn't have any money to leave anyone. And, you know, he lived with his maternal grandmother because I don't know. I literally couldn't find any. I didn't look into Joshua Sr. But like, yeah, like, I'm
and
sure
she lost her husband.
Exactly. I'm like,
so
I'm
she
sure
probably doesn't have an income.
No. And she has how many she had how many kids. So, yeah, it's like she probably didn't have a ton of money. So like. Kid didn't have the greatest start to life, but he did okay.
Okay.
He did
yeah,
survive.
Yeah, the ocean had it out
yeah,
for this
Jesus
fucking family.
It was funny because I read someone, like, in one of the articles I read, I think it was on Rejected Princesses, that they were like, the Neptune's car was cursed. I'm like, I think this family was fucking cursed.
Dude, if it was the ship that was cursed, it was like, okay, I'm gonna lull him into a false sense of security,
and then I'm going to
inflict generational trauma.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom, boom, boom. And then I'm gonna drown that kid. Like, what the fuck?
Also, I looked up the hospital. It is still named that. They didn't change the name because God knows that happens. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Here's the thing: if they change the name, the hospital is cursed.
Yeah. Right.
You don't name anything after a woman who went through all of that and suffered for it and then changed the name because you will be cursed.
Right.
You're cursed.
So there is a novel written by Douglas Kelly, obviously like a very long time ago, but it's called The Captain's Wife and it's inspired by Mary Patton.
That's cool.
But yeah, I like that. The Florence Nightingale of the Sea. I'm like, I feel like I like it and I don't like it because I'm like, that makes it sound like she just cared for sick people. And I'm like, she did so much more than that.
I was going to say she did everything.
She's like a fighting Florence Nightingale of the Sea.
Also, again, just the image of this pregnant woman who's like...
Yeah,
so
by the time...
Fuck you. I cursed the day your mama set eyes on your daddy. We're doing this.
Yeah, by the time they docked in New York or in San Francisco, she was 8 months pregnant. So, yeah, like...
Jesus God.
I do. Like, I think that's so insane that she steered the ship for 56 days. Yeah, essentially, like, talked her way out of a mutiny... navigated not only like a giant ship but like in storms, like dealt with still like caring for her husband, and then yeah, was just like, I no longer care about Victorian era propriety, fuck changing my clothes, I'm gonna get us home.
If you have a problem with it, there's the ocean.
Exactly, like, just get off the fucking boat.
Yeah, I don't have time for this. I'm not even turning the boat around. You get off the boat.
Well, I do. I really love that she, like, when they pulled into port, she chose to be at the helm. Because she could have. She could have stepped down and given it to, like, the second, you know, the second mate or anyone like that. But she chose to navigate it into port. Which, like, I feel like is kind of a fuck you to, like, other people. And, like, she didn't do it for fame. I feel like she did it to kind of be like, I did this. Fuck everyone.
Well, it's such a boss ass move, but also again, she's like, fuck this Victorian sense of modesty.
Yeah.
I literally did this. I got us here. I'm gonna be at the helm and y'all can suck it. I'm so pregnant, I can't think straight.
Yeah. I do think it's so crazy though that like the infection probably had reached her husband's brain because he went blind and deaf. And she kept him alive. That's probably why they call her the Florence Nightingale of the Seas. Because I'm like, how insane. Like, that's impressive.
Yeah, no, it's
because it's not like she had medicine out in the middle of the fucking ocean. Like, just everything she did is just so insane. Like, She basically was self-taught on navigation and medicine. And yeah, she navigated a massive ship. Like, this was not a tiny ship. It was what's known as like a clipper ship. So this is like one of those like three masts with the masts that run to the front. Like, this is a big ass ship. Yeah, so not only is she driving that, but in her free time, she's taking care of her husband. Like, that's kind of what the articles were saying, is like, that's why she didn't change her clothes, because she was like, between sleeping minimal hours a day, you know, helping the crew with whatever needed to be done on the ship, navigating the ship, and taking care of my husband, it just didn't fucking matter to change my clothes.
Well, you know, in those days, it took, God, an hour to change
clothes.
Especially
for women. Yeah.
There were no leggings. Something else. So something I realized, she died on March 17th, which is St. Gertrude's feast day. Mm-hmm. St. Gertrude is the patron saint of travelers.
Yep. Look at all these connections.
Oh, my goodness. Also, your story this week pairs so well with my story from last week.
I know.
Just like pregnant women getting shit done when their husbands are out of commission. Like,
right.
And doing stuff that is absurd.
Well, it reminds me of the one I did just a few weeks ago. Like with the bridge. Like where her husband got sick and she was just like, fine, I'm going to fucking do it. Whatever.
These are like real. These are ride or die ladies.
I know. I'm like thinking about
it. Like, this is what they mean when they say ride or die.
I'm pretty sure I just don't, like, if my husband got sick and I, for some reason, had to do his job, like, I don't think I could, not because it's, like, a man's job or anything, but, like, I do not have a brain. Like, my brain can't do the types of thing his brains can. Like, I don't know computers well enough to do his job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I couldn't do my fella's job.
I guess if I did what these women did and kind of like preemptively were like, I'm going to read up on this shit just in case, maybe then I could. But it's like, yeah, like the chance of that happening now, like, is so incredibly small.
Yeah.
Like, maybe, you know, maybe if my husband had a job where like it made a little more sense too, but. They just hire someone else.
Well, shit, Kelly. That was an insane story with a bummer of an ending. So what are you thankful for?
Not being cursed by the sea.
I mean, so far.
So far, yeah, exactly.
Anything can happen. Curses are equal opportunity employers.
That's why I live in Minnesota. Like, the sea can't get me here. No.
But we do have 10,000 lakes, which are vying for blood.
Yeah, probably. They've probably had enough of my blood. I grew up on a lake. I injured myself often. Anyways, I'm thankful. What am I thankful for? Like, what's happened recently? I'm thankful for, like, I'm gonna go with my colleagues, just because, like, I've had kind of a rough time at, like, work lately, just due to various things, and, like, they've all been, like, super supportive and being like, if you need to take time off, just take time off. And when I did take time off, like, people covered for me, and like, I'm really appreciative to work in an at a place in an environment that is so supportive and is so like, you know, on top of like making sure we're all doing okay. Cause like, yeah, I work in a profession where we make sure that people are doing okay, but that doesn't necessarily mean the place you work cares. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely know and have heard of psychologist places that are like, nope, we're just going to run them into the ground. You know, profit, profit, profit. And I definitely don't work at a place like that. And I'm really, I'm appreciative of that, but I'm like also appreciative that, yeah, like there's always someone there. Like if I have a question or if I need something, or even if I just need to kind of be like, all right, let me tell you this. Like it's, I'm glad I do the type of therapy I do because then I know I have a team at my back, which is incredibly helpful. And yeah, it's just been, it's been nice, like that camaraderie and teamwork. And even when things have been going well, it's still, it's nice to have people to like share those victories with too. Yeah. So what are you thankful for?
I guess I'm thankful, for some of the guests at the hotel. Several of them have gotten good news, which is awesome. It's always great to hear, nice, because yeah, the majority of our guests are patients at the clinic and they're going through shit and, you know, they'll tell me about it. And so I'll be like, hey, how'd the surgery go? Or how did like, oh, you're like off your meds. It's great. Or you're on this. That's awesome. So yeah, several of my regular guests have gotten really good news that they've shared with me. And that's always really great to hear. Another thing is like, one of the guests was like, what you do, just like listening to people and talking with them, like, you don't know how much it means to people. And like, we really appreciate it. And I don't know, it was just kind of one of those things that made me feel good. And especially I've been feeling kind of overwhelmed lately. And, you know, working three nights a week is like not a big deal, but it starts to kind of add up where you're like, oh my God, I'm going. I feel like I haven't stopped. But then hearing something like that, and I do enjoy it. Like I get there and I'm like, I like this. Yeah. But I don't know, it makes just it nice easier and validating.
Yeah.
Like I feel like I'm doing a good job. And for a guest to kind of go out of their way and tell me that was really nice. I really appreciate it.
Aw.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah.
Look at you making people's days better.
With free alcohol.
And an ear to listen.
I'm just going to say it. I don't think people would be as like appreciative of me being there if I wasn't giving them free booze. But
I mean, don't discount yourself.
I am kind of living my NPC dream right now.
Yeah.
Like I do kind of enjoy that.
That's so great.
Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Whining About Herstory. Like us on Facebook at Whining About Herstory, Instagram at WAHPad.
Our website is whiningaboutherstory.com, where you can find a link to our merch, a link to our Patreon, where you can donate for as little as $1 a month. A link to our Buy Me a Coffee, where you can donate a bottle of wine for as little as $5 one time, where we will buy a bottle of wine based on your name or what you tell us, etc., etc. And rate us 5 stars wherever you listen, or leave us a nice review. It gives us all the warm, fuzzy feelings.
Yeah, and it pisses off people who leave 1-star reviews for women's sports bars that
or
they've never
not
been to.
History, not serious history podcast, because they don't read the description of the podcast.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Whining About Herstory. I'm Emily.
I'm Kelly.
And have an empowered day, y'all.
Bye.